First Baptist Church of Redmond, April 9th, 2017. Know Jesus Shows God Cares.
Please rise. Reading from Luke 7, verses 15 to 16. So he who was dead sat up and began to speak, and he presented him to his mother. Then fear came upon all, and they glorified God, saying, A great prophet has risen up among us, and God has visited his people. You may be seated.
Thank you very much. Young friends, because we care that you have to sit here. Oh, look at that. Look at how honest and responsible he is. He brought me the dollar back. You're very good. But Mr. Kerman's attached, I know, to this dollar. We'll give this dollar. That'll go against all the bills the church has as a dollar. Okay? Never let it be said I didn't do the least I can do. But that's the least I can do. So here is, after church is over, young friends, for sitting through church, I've got this for you. If you take a look at Luke chapter 7, verses 11 through 17, we see, I don't want to say this is an unusual occasion, but it is. Because Jesus is frequently, and if you look in your Bible, if you have the time to ever get a comparison of the Gospels, harmony of the Gospels, and look at them together, you'll see in the first year and a half of Jesus' 3 or so year public ministry time, he did a lot of healing times. There were a lot of healings. You've already known that the most commonly recorded healing in the Bible is Jesus giving sight to the blind, of the things that Jesus did. Because when he did a miracle, it was almost always in a theological context where he's going to do something miraculous, and then he would preach, he would teach about it. And he would heal the blind, and then he would talk to people about wanting to see God's truth, to understand what God is trying to say, and not be blinded by the deception. But today's miracle is different. I am not prepared to say that it's the only time that Jesus did this, but when I look at it, this to me is, I'll say, unique in the healings that Jesus did because of what happened, how it's recorded, and the setting. Because there are times, I know it's dark, it's on purpose, there are times when life just feels very bleak. Very, very bleak. And we're looking right now at something that Jesus did that entered into the life of someone whose heart was about as bleak as it could be. And the attention and the glory that was given to God as a result demonstrates the title of your message, and that is know that Jesus cares about us. You know that Jesus cares. If you remember from the previous section, as we looked at the beginning of Luke 7, the end of Luke 6, Jesus is speaking about very special things. He has just got done healing a centurion's servant. Now, that servant, if you remember, was only mostly dead, to take a phrase. Very sick, going to die. And then the servant, his master, the centurion, sent for Jesus and then changed his mind. Jesus, you don't have to come here. If you just say it, I know my servant will be healed. Well, wow. So some people, well, how sick was he? He couldn't have been very sick because Jesus just spoke and he was healed. Well, we have a story today is a boy who is dead. He's completely dead. He is so dead, we're interrupting his funeral. His funeral procession. Only one time in my life have I had the opportunity to see something similar to this. In the United States, when we have funerals, my parents have died, siblings have died, generally there's a formal ceremony, hearse driving and such, but not the dramatic way that burials are recorded for us in the Bible. In the Bible, they would have some sort, in Jewish culture, in what we see recorded, there would be some type of an observance. People would come and express their compassion, their love for the survivors, their concern for the one who had just passed. There would be a religious service, and then they would carry the body outside because in Israel, you did not bury anyone inside the walls of a city. Now, archaeologically, that's interesting because if you're looking in the past and they're trying to discover how large cities were at different times, if they find a graveyard in a Jewish community they know that that was outside, so the walls they would see would be the city walls and how they had advanced over time. So this young man, his father had died. So it was a very emotional time for mom, and now for mom, her, we don't know if they're sisters, but her only son has died. Where are we at? We're at the city of Nain. This city is not mentioned any place else in our Bible. And so as we take a look, it seems that if you take a moment and look at, this is a contemporary map. Up here is the city of Nazareth, and down here, it's a West Bank city, and Nain, N-I-N. And so we think that is the contemporary location of the ancient city of Nain. People seem to think that, and the name has lasted on, and it has changed very, very little over a few thousand years. As typical, when Jesus travels, especially in the first half of his ministry, so this is the first half of his ministry event, as Jesus has traveled, he had just given the Sermon on the Mount, Sermon on the Plain, he had just now had done this healing of the centurion's servant. So it's the same day or just briefly afterwards, maybe the next day, Jesus is traveling, he is walking, and a crowd of people is with him, his disciples and some others. So he is surrounded by people. People want to see him. He's a dramatic teacher. He talks about what God is doing, what God says. He has a compassionate message. He has something that people can build on. He talks about eternal kinds of messages about life, death, rewards, hell, heaven, treasures from above. He's preaching about these kinds of things, so people are hanging on his words. So they come with him and want to see what he is doing. So Jesus is traveling, again, walking, not very far from where he just was, and he enters the city of Nain. Apparently, most of these cities had a primary gate, defensible, and then just a place to welcome guests and to monitor people as they came and left. And coincidence, very likely not, Jesus enters as this funeral party is leaving. So I started to say a few minutes ago, one of the times I was in Romania and I was in a small village, I got to see an Orthodox funeral, which would have been very similar to this. The Jews tended to carry their bodies on a stretcher, but sometimes they would use an animal cart. So I don't know, the Bible doesn't really say what's going on, except it seems that men were carrying it, not just walking with it. We'll get there in a minute. But there would have been, and just something you did, it's a cultural thing, you would have not only had your immediate friends and family and people that you knew, but you would pay professionals to walk with you to demonstrate your concern and your compassion and loss. So there would have been paid mourners in the group, I don't know how many. Generally, it was determined by your income. In this woman's case, there probably weren't very many because she seems to have been poor. But what Jesus did when he walked into the city is he sees coming out a funeral march. And probably not very large, but there were some. And he saw a widow grieving for her only son. So she's already lost her husband. Don't know if there's any other children. There could be sisters of this boy, but we know that he was the only son. We don't know how old he was, but he died. And here's where this story is unique in my perspective. Is if you remember before the previous week's message, first part of Luke chapter 7, when Jesus was confronted with the centurion's child, the centurion's servant. The centurion said, hey, I care for this servant. Can you come and heal him? The Jewish leader says, come meet this centurion friend we are. He's a good man. He loves our nation. And hey, he built the synagogue, the very synagogue that you, Jesus, have preached at recently. He paid for, built, and had constructed. He is worthy of our time. And Jesus, I'll go along. I'll meet him. Here, no one brought this family, this woman, to Jesus' attention. Zero. They're just walking in and he sees this. No one pointed it out, oh, what a sad situation. Nobody said, we're going to go meet. Nobody said, let's go to the gravesite with him. Nobody said, let's come early before this happened because there's a lady with a sick. No, no, Jesus just sees this. And he is moved with compassion. Now, lots of times we know people who've just had a bad thing happen to them, or you feel for them. And you wish, maybe you can do something for them, but you can't do very much, or you can do a little, but can't do a lot, because sometimes the pain, the suffering, the loss is very significant, and that's what you have here. Jesus looks at this woman, how old is she? I don't know. Her husband's gone, so she's gone through the grief of having a husband die, taking care of at least this one child, who I'm sure is a great help. Because, you know, parents, you know that once your children get, you know, past 5 or 6 or 7 years old, they can do a lot of stuff. Not that the little ones can't, but you can do. So however old this boy is, I'm sure he's a great help to his mother. And we don't know the circumstances, but he dies. Luke was out of the way to comment that the Lord is watching this. Why? Sometimes he calls him Jesus or calls him something else, but he calls him Lord here because Luke, as a good writer under the control of the Holy Spirit, is indicating what is going to be demonstrated here, and that is the power of Jesus Christ the Lord. He's about to receive him, reveal himself more so as Lord than before. And Jesus, again, there's no provocation, no prodding, no pointing out. The disciples are probably just standing there in the crowd with him. Jesus had done some great things. Nobody says, Jesus, can you help this lady? No record of this anywhere. But Jesus looks, and on his own, he is moved with compassion. His heart goes out to her. Because he, the Son of God, who would have been involved in creating her himself, knows her discouragement, and he was moved with pity for her. What is she doing? What are you going to do at the funeral of your only son? Your husband's already gone. Nobody's there to comfort you. What are you going to do? You're going to cry. We know she was crying because Jesus approached her and said, don't cry anymore. Cease weeping if you want. Now, he's not speaking harshly to her, but he sees this lady who is crying at her child's funeral. Don't know if that leaves her alone or again if there's some female siblings. Doesn't give too many details. But Jesus wants to try to do something to give her some rest, some peace. And while this might be a moment of encouragement, because she would have seen whoever's talking to her. Did she know who he was? I don't know. Whoever's talking here was a person of some importance because there's a little crowd of people with him. He's obviously going to have the appearance of a rabbi. He's being treated as a rabbi. And he stops and talks to her. So this might remove her tears to encourage her to stop crying, but what can remove death? What is she expecting? And here Jesus sympathized. And when Jesus sympathized, he got involved. Like with Lazarus, like with others. Jesus gets involved. So I like this picture because this is very possibly the kind of setting you might have had if they were outside the city gates when they met. He came and touched the open coffin. So again, don't think coffin like we're thinking about it. Think of someone who is going to be carried on essentially a stretcher and their body will have been wrapped. So think of what happened, what did not happen when Jesus died. The ladies went back to wrap him later. That would have been done already. And he's in some kind of preliminary body bag of some sort, but they're going about to put him in a tomb. So it's not a casket like we think of it, but just he's there. So when Jesus walked over to where the dead boy was being carried on this stretcher, the pallbearers took the hint and stopped walking, perceptive men. They're walking, they see Jesus, and they stop. Who is this guy? I don't know, but he wants, maybe he's a relative, maybe he's a friend, maybe he's just going to express some compassion, but they stop. And then you have happen what is too much to dream for. Young man, I say to you, arise. Young man, this boy couldn't have been any more than 17 or 18, possibly a teenager, possibly younger. Otherwise, he would have been called a young man. I say to you, arise. So he who was dead sat up. And how could you tell this wasn't fake? What did he do on your screen? So he's wrapped up, you know, and we talked about having cloths put around your face and your body. And he sat up and began to talk. You know, how come I can't see anything? What's going on? I don't understand. So whatever he's saying, he's talking. So there is no deception. If you're like me, you've read those stories. I had a couple acquaintances who worked in funeral homes, and sometimes muscles contract and sounds come out from a dead body. But this is not the case. This isn't just some muscle contraction. This isn't a natural thing. This person sits up and he begins to speak. Notice how there's no preliminary action or struggle. Jesus didn't do any incantation. Jesus didn't stop and pray. Jesus did not ask his Father's permission. Jesus didn't ask people to do something. He just came over, young man, resurrect, arise. And the boy sat up, and who knows what he said. But Jesus is God. He is the author of life. And he is brought back to life. Normally, this is something I've been reading, and I think it's very likely the case. In the Bible, when someone who is dead is brought back to life, in the Old Testament or in the New Testament, by some prophet, or here in the case of Jesus, generally the person who is brought back to life immediately reconnects with their family. There's family ties that are being healed, or reconnection that is happening. That's why so often in the Old Testament you'll see this case, a child loved by their parents, loved by perhaps a surviving parent. All of a sudden this child is brought back to life, an instant restoration and reconnection with their parents. Here, this is the case here. A child has died, and mom is just, her heart has no more bottom left to it. And now she reconnects with her son. Generally, the miracles we have recorded of bringing death brought back to life are someone who has a loved one who cares for them and misses them, and they immediately reconnect and restore their family losses. When people, so imagine there's some kind of a crowd. How many people? I don't know. But Jesus would have had his disciples. There would have been some local people who were following him around. Some people who probably came out from this community to watch him, know Jesus is coming. They want to see what he does, hear what he has to say. If he's coming to town, he's going to preach a little bit maybe. So some people are watching. And there would have been no mistake. Because remember, by the time this boy got to this point where he was being taken to a crypt, his body would have been washed, anointed. He would have been wrapped up in cloth. And his body's next step was to decompose. So there is no doubt that he is dead. There is no doubt at all. And so when this happens, fear, shock came upon all. But look, they glorified God. Essentially, the Bible here is telling us they were awestruck. How did this happen? Why? There's no way you could have faked this. Jesus hadn't been to this specific community, at least recently, perhaps not before. And so there's no way he would have set this up. This lady's tears are genuine. She would have paid some money up front, you know, because no funeral is free. She would have paid some money up front for these kind of things to happen. So this is not something that is false. Suddenly, you know, who wouldn't be surprised? And what do? They stop and give God glory. What has happened? This woman has great joy, and they bear testimony to Jesus' loving concern. And so for us, this is the point I'm thinking of today. What do we have? God has visited his people. So when Jesus did this tremendous miracle, just because he wanted to, sometimes Jesus does something, I don't want to say out of obligation, but because of the situation. But here, Jesus just saw a terribly sad woman and decided to get involved in her life and help her. Why? Because Jesus cares, God cares, the Holy Spirit cares. God is interested in our lives, and he is interested in how we feel. Yet these people notice this amazing, miraculous thing, and as far as I can tell, they failed to let everything soak in. Because there's not records here of people turning to God in faith. Generally, if people respond to Jesus in faith because of a miraculous thing, the Bible notes it. So here what we have is a terribly sad situation. Jesus gets involved. He heals. People are shocked, amazed. This isn't the act of a charlatan. This isn't magic. Jesus healed this child. He's restored this woman's hope. God be praised. God be glorified. Canceled the funeral. I don't think he can get a refund back then. Who knows? They probably saved whatever they was. This is amazing. This is to remind me that this really happened. I didn't just make this up. I didn't wake up one day. So words about Jesus are circulating, but people don't really let this focus in on who is this. Because the focus is a little on Jesus, but it's also on God in the big picture kind of way. Look what God has done, aka through this person. So Jesus' disciples would have caught the import of this. But most of the rest of the crowd did not. They understood that a great prophet, a greater prophet, was among them. Look, he triumphs over death. So God has prayed, God is honored, God is glorified, but there wasn't a lot of faith adjustment going on. For us, Jesus promises an atmosphere of calm as he intervened. Notice when Jesus saw this, he didn't rattle the crowd, he didn't holler, he walked up to this woman, which would have been a little bit unusual to interrupt a funeral. But if this lady is really crying, she's very likely by herself. There's very possibly nobody there of equal status who could comfort her. So Jesus walked up and tried, "Ma'am, don't cry. Don't cry anymore." So how many times have you thought that about that someone when you see someone's crying who's suffering? Not suffering because of a tantrum, but suffering because there's pain. Stop crying. Like, get a hold of yourself. Things are going to be okay. And then he walks up and does his miraculous thing. Jesus does this quietly, calmly, but with a shocking kind of result. It's voluntary. Jesus was simply moved with compassion, knowing what he saw. And for you and I, this is something to have hope in, because perhaps in your life or in the lives of people you know, there's some pain, some suffering, some discouragement, some feelings of weakness or emptiness, and you wonder, you know, does anybody notice? And it seems like maybe nobody notices, and if you're not careful, you think God doesn't notice or God doesn't care. But here Jesus just walks up and gets involved because he sees the compassion that is needed. And so sometimes in our lives, we can have hope from this, because whether it's us or somebody else, you learn the idea that Jesus may just involuntarily look and get involved. Because we need God to get involved in our lives. We forget this sometimes because we think we're tough, we can handle it all. And I don't know about you, but I tell you right now, I can't handle it all. And I need God to help, I need God to interdict, I need at least God to give me strength, and sometimes other things too. And so here, Jesus interdicted directly. Why? Because he just saw there was pain and suffering. Nobody asked, nobody directed, he just walked up and did it. And Jesus worked to restore what family was possible. Jesus did not bring back her husband. Did anything else happen? I don't know if anything else happened with this lady. But there was her son, and this was something that Jesus decided to get involved with. God is generally interested in restoring the relationships that we have, and sometimes you can't fix the past. Jesus didn't fix the past, but he fixed right now. And one of the things you can do is you can hope, God, help fix things now. What can we do now? What could be better today? So these three things, these lessons for these are significant to me. That when Jesus saw this difficult situation, he walked in and first tried to produce some calm. Then he walked up on his own to try and do the difference that he could make. And then third, he tried to work on and restore relationships, particularly family relationships, when he first could. Several years ago, there was that tsunami, I think 2004 or something, somewhere in there, in Indonesia, where there was so much loss of life. That's the Time magazine cover back from that day. And a lot of people felt like they should do something. Oops, excuse me. I went too far. A lot of people felt they should do something. And so sometimes people would pray. They gave money. There are some people who were able to specifically help because of their status in life or their job. Rebecca O'Connor says, when I first saw the horrific images of the Asian tsunami disaster, I was working the night shift at New York Presbyterian where I'm a pediatric nurse. I felt compelled to do something. And so she did. She took some time off. She flew to Sri Lanka along with 8 other medical professionals from New York for a 2-week medical relief trip. Arriving in Sri Lanka, she traveled 150 miles of destruction before arriving in a downtown area that had been completely devastated. Setting up their clinic in a downtown Sri Lanka mosque, they saw 40 to 100 patients every shift. These 9 people, 8 plus 1, as far as I can tell. Respiratory problems and foot and leg wounds caused by stepping on debris when wading through water and the difficult setting were the most common ailments treated. Rebecca O'Connor and the others soon discovered that they were less than a mile away from a local Sri Lankan hospital and another large medical clinic. She questioned a Sri Lankan friend, "Why are people coming to us?" Because people could have gone to some people had gone to the hospital, some to the clinic, but these 9 Americans setting up just in this mosque were busy. Why aren't they going over there? The person they met, the local Sri Lankan, said this: at the hospital, someone asks name, age, complaint, gives them a sheet of paper, and tells them to go wait somewhere. Ever had that happen at the hospital? And they turn to this group of 9. You set them down, ask them what's wrong, and you treat them. You listen to them. So this nurse summed it up. She said, it seemed that the most valuable therapy we were providing had nothing to do with antibiotics or wound care. By listening to story after heartbreaking story, which can be very draining on you, admiring pictures of families once happy and healthy, playing soccer with children who lost everything, we were able to say, we care about you. We share in your grief without speaking a word. So this is what Jesus did in this often overlooked miracle with the widow of Nain. And in a large practical way, this is what Jesus did when he gave himself for us on the cross. Jesus' actions on the cross were clearly accompanied by words, by messages, by prophecy, by fulfillment, by people who were watching, people who were fleeing and talking. But our point is that what Jesus did for us showed that it wasn't just words, but it was action, conduct, that demonstrated his love for us.